对。
Welcome to
好事Whimsical Tour.
I'm Esther.
I'm Mary.
And we're coming to you from Tucson, Arizona.
And we're telling real stories of the fantastical.
All of our stories are true or told to us as true.
Occasionally, we alter names to protect privacy.
And places for the same reason.
Today's story is Trauma Tales.
Trauma Tales. And we have a treat for you.
Yes, we do.
Our special guest, MJ, is back.
Yes.
With some more chilling tales. And this one is really cool because we get a twofer. She's going to tell two tales on the same general topic. And we're very, very excited about this.
We are.
She's a great storyteller. And yes.
And thank you so much for being here with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Yay.
It's exciting. Woohoo.
And so we have some more firsthand tales from you.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Back in the early 2000s, I was in a really awful car accident.
Oh.
Leaving my school, going to pick up my daughter, and a school bus literally ran over my car with me in it.
Oh,
and
geez.
I was trapped inside.
Mm.
So everybody that day, and this is just to kind of set the scene, everybody that day, they thought I was already gone,
wow.
You know. But everybody did their absolute best.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't remember the accident itself blissfully.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Lord. Yeah, I appreciate that.
That's great.
And the next thing I know is I'm waking up in ICU, and this is at least a day later. It might have been a little longer. I don't know, because I was in a coma. So,
right. Oh.
I don't know. And so, anyhow, when I do come to and I'm there, and then, you know, you go from ICU to kind of like the critical care rooms. You know, it's not ICU, but it's a step, but you're not in the, you know, anyway. And so as this story starts, I'm in this room, and when I was able to communicate again, I asked my friends, and you got to love having teacher friends.
Mm-hmm.
They already had the list on the wall. Everybody had their shift.
Oh,
they knew who was coming,
yeah.
Who was going.
Very organized.
It was rare that I was alone in those first few weeks.
Good.
And it, you know, I mean, it's awesome.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, of course, when your friends would come in, they would touch you. They would reach out and touch you. The one arm that they could touch, they would touch.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I'm in this room and I could sort of speak again, I would ask them, does the person in the bed next to me, do they have a big family? Because I love hearing their kids.
Mm.
I love hearing them. They're just, you know, so much full of joy. And, you know, and my daughter was small at the time. And so I hadn't seen her at this point because they did not want her to see me and that be the last thing she remembered. Because
so
I was
frightened.
Touch and go for quite a while. And they didn't know if I was going to make it. I didn't know if I was going to make it. When you have to focus on every breath and decide whether you're going to take it or not, that's kind of where I was.
Okay.
So they didn't want that to be her last memory. So I hadn't seen her, which I have to say, out of the whole ordeal, that was the hardest.
Of course.
Is not seeing your baby.
Of course.
So, and they would all kind of, from what I could see, because I could only see out of one eye, the other had been sewn shut. And so I could kind of see out of this eye because I was so swollen from all the trauma.
Yeah.
So they would sit on this side, and I was kind of like, okay. I could see like outlines, and I knew from their voices who they were.
Yeah.
I couldn't really, you know, see their faces at this point. And so, you know, couldn't really tell because I kept asking and nobody answered.
Huh.
So I was like, so as things progressed and I could see clearer through this eye, I could see the expression on their face. Like, oh yeah, it's the drugs. It's the, you know, it's this, it's that. And I'm like going, no, I'm telling you guys, they're kids and they come in and they play. And they play under my bed, and I don't care. I love the sound of kids laughing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of the best sounds in the world.
Yeah, it is.
Happy kids, yes. You know. And then I realized there was a pattern. When friends would come in and someone would be touching me, the kids were not there.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yes.
And then, but when they were there. Now, I will circle. Well, I'll just go tell this one first, the long one first. So things progress and, you know, eventually I get out and I'm in the rehab hospital. Mm-hmm. Kids weren't there. And I have my one friend, Terry, who would often take the night shift and be there. And I told her, and she goes, you know, we were really concerned in the beginning because we thought, oh, you know, we know her head is crushed, but I think she's really like, whoa. And I said, I'm telling you, there are kids that come and play. I can see them plain as day. And they're little kids. They're like 3 and 4 and, you know, 5-ish kind of, you know. And she was like, there hasn't been anybody in the room with you.
Oh.
You have had this room by yourself.
Whoa.
And we were both just like going, okay, that's really weird, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so we go along, and eventually, like I say, I go to the rehab hospital. I don't see the kids there, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're like going, okay, whatever. And I get out of the rehab hospital eventually because I've learned to walk and I've learned to talk and I've learned to, you know, I'm learning how to think differently, all these things, right? Go along with that kind of severity. And about every 3 months, I would have another surgery because they would let things heal and then they would do the next one. They would let things heal and do the next one. You know, you've been in the, oh, I'm sorry, sweetie. That was too hard.
Oh, we have another dog with us today.
Yes. Sorry.
A little,
solo dog.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll sorry, solo. Sorry. Yes. So because of the injury to my neck, I was in a halo at this point. And you get put out for surgery differently because they can't tilt your head back because you're in a halo. So it's different. So every time you go under, every time you go under anyway, it's risky, but this was even more so. So, there were a couple of times that it was, you know, touch and go. We'd go through the whole thing every time, like, okay, if something happens to me, this, you know, here's, it let me go. And okay. It's like, so, and I would be on that same floor after the surgery, and again, the kids were there
in the recovery.
And they would be right next to my bed, and they would put their hand on the bed, and they'd be smiling at me. I mean, it wasn't scary. It wasn't anything. It was very welcoming and warm. And then, as things would get really hard for me, they would turn their hand over, palm up. And I knew, just like I knew the first time I was in, you know, that if I reached out and took their hand, that was it.
Oh.
I would go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there would be no more pain. There would be no more. But that would be it. And they would take me with them. And I would go. But I had my baby to get better for.
That's right.
Oh, yes.
So I never took their hand. But when a friend would come in, and they would stay until someone else touched me.
Wow.
And then they would be gone.
Interesting.
So as a couple of years go by, and we're still doing this every 3 months, every 6 months, you know, there's another surgery. And it was at the trauma center. So sometimes there were no beds. Right? Oh. Like, I would have a surgery and supposed to go to the orthopedic wing, but there were no beds available because something awful had happened to someone else. Poor people. So this one surgery, which was, you know, one of the trickier ones, and my friend Terry was there after the surgery when I was in the recovery room, and they just said, look, we don't have a bed for her, but you are welcome to stay with her as long as you want because we don't have a bed for her, and it's probably not going to be for another 12 to 24 hours till we can get her a room. So we're like, okay. So, you know, recovery room from surgery. There's a wall of beds along that wall. There's a wall of beds along this wall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they brought this one gentleman in, and he was like kitty corner across from me, so I could see. And his wife was with him. And he was not doing well. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're coming and they're going. And distinctly, I heard him say, and Terry was there with me, so I know it wasn't just the drugs. He said, he told his wife, ring the buzzer. So she rang the buzzer, and the nurse came over, and she said, you know, yes, sir, you know. And he goes, why are you allowing kids in the recovery room? And she said, and Terry and I are looking at each other, because now we're really listening. You can eavesdrop, but, you know, what are you going to do? You're laying there. And he goes, they're playing under my bed, and I can't rest. Could you please, whoever's kids they are, tell them, you know, to go. And very gently they're saying to him, sir, there are no kids. There are no children. And I'm from across the way going, the hell they're not. Yes, there are. You know? But, so Terry and I are watching this unfold, and this happens several times, you know, where he has his wife buzz and do that. And I thought, and I looked at Terry, and she looked at me, and I said, if he takes their hand, he's going to go. And she's like, what? I said, do you remember me telling you about the kid? And she goes, oh, yeah, I remember. That's why we're sitting here looking at each other like, holy crap. And his wife had to get up and go to the restroom. And he coded. He was gone. And they tried to revive him, and they couldn't, and all that kind of stuff. And so in my heart of hearts, I know that whatever those gentle beings are there, when your suffering is so great, they are there to help you pass over.
Yes, yes.
And all I had to do was stretch my hand out a little more. But
you had your
It wasn't your time.
But it was a choice.
Right.
And it gave him choice.
It was not comfort.
Yeah. It wasn't. It was it was, you know, you're not gonna hurt anymore. It's not, you know, everything's gonna be okay if you come with us. But they never uttered a word. They just laughed and they played.
And they
put their little hands out. But they never touched me.
Wow.
They let you decide.
Yeah, and you needed to be back for your baby.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. So, yeah. So that was, you know, always kind of wanted to do a survey of that one hospital and go, who all seen kids? You know? When it's touch and go for you. But it was like, it was like, so I know it wasn't just me.
Yeah,
And I know that they're, you know, there's more.
Sure, sure.
So.
And that's so interesting. Like, what are they doing there specifically? Were they, you know?
Well, and it's a trauma center, so there's a lot of people in a lot of pain. And how beautiful that that they would be there, those beings or the children or however people envision them, that there's something there to bring people comfort if they do choose to.
Yeah, to stop, to not this, take that next breath, because, you know, and I know, and it's like we, you know, we wondered about that, because it's like, are they children that pass there?
I wondered about that.
I wondered about that also.
Yeah.
Because my other story kind of links to that.
Oh, okay.
So excellent.
I don't know.
Okay. Yes, please.
Yes. Okay. So, as I'm in this room in the beginning days before I went to the rehab hospital, you know, got to the point where they actually could get me out of bed, and they would prop me up in this chair in front of the window because I couldn't walk on my own. But, you know, eventually you need to change the sheets. And they would prop me up, and the window in my room looked down where cars would pull up and drop off and pick up.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Not ambulances, but where the car, it was like that circle in front,
yeah.
you know, where it's picking somebody up from surgery or you're dropping somebody off because they're having a baby, you know, and you're going to go park the car.
The entrance of that particular trauma center. And it's a circular drive. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I could see that. And so before they would prop me up in the chair, they would give me, you know, they would time it so it was the pain meds were on board before they moved me. And I don't know what the stuff is that's a step above heroin. Not heroin. Good Lord. morphine.
You're right.
Morphine. Sorry. No, I have nothing in common with Pablo Escobar. No. But, you know, they would, you know, through your portal, they would do it so that you could stand to be moved.
Right.
And so I'm propped up in this chair, you know, and I noticed there, it would be the same, you know, kind of routine. The car pulls up, the wheelchair comes out, you know, with someone to attend it. And then whoever the loved one is helping that person into the wheelchair. And then they drive off and go park the car and, you know, and they turn around with the wheelchair and take them in. And, but there was always a third person. And frequently I saw this one man and then these other two younger women. And what, you know, and still I'm looking with one eye, you know, so it's like, oh, whatever. But they didn't look the same as the other people. They weren't, you know, it wasn't mist. It wasn't. Opaque is the best way that I can describe it.
Okay, got it.
But they were still wearing clothes, but there was kind of a lack of color, but they weren't totally white and they weren't totally see-through. So I thought it, you know, was my eye.
Yeah.
So at some point, one of my friends was there and, you know, standing beside me. And I said, I see that guy a lot. He helps a lot of people in and out of their cars as they come. And I said, and they're like, what guy? And I'm like, well, that guy, standing right there, the one that, you know, and they're like, no, there's whoever the attendant is with the wheelchair and the person in it, and they're wheeling in. I'm like, no, the guy that's, and they were always to the left. I have no idea why. But they were always, I said, no, the guy's standing right there to the left. And they're like, whatever they gave you is really good because, no, there is nobody there. And I was like, And, you know, day after day, this happens. And sometimes it was the two women that were together that were younger than him. But what they would do was as the wheelchair came out or the loved one was running back to the car to hop back in to go park it, it's like they were a buffer between them and the oncoming traffic. And there were several times I kind of saw them step in front of that person and that person would, like, hesitate in their movement.
Oh, almost like they also sense were reacting to that.
They were reacting to it, you know.
Yeah.
Like one time it was a car coming too fast and the person was about to, you know, the driver was about to cut across to open the other door. And I saw this being knock the keys out of their hand.
Oh,
and they had to stop and pick them up and this other car just went boom, you know, through the thing. So they were like a buffer, you know, they were looking out for these people and that's, nobody saw them but me to say, but I was like, it gave me comfort because I still didn't know if I was going to make it or not.
Right.
And being the total type A that I am, I'm like, well, can you just be, are you just done? You know, what's next? Well, that's part of what's next. They were still helping people.
Right.
Even though they were never acknowledged, they were never, you know, but they were still there helping. That was their job every day. I saw them every day. So I'm like, well, you're not done. You still got shit to do. Right. Just because you pass, you've still got stuff to do. And, to me, it's almost like maybe it fits your personality. You know, how can you give back to people? You know, and it's not even people you know, you know, I mean, it was just whoever happened to be pulling up.
Yeah.
They were always there to kind of look out for them. Like
guardians.
Like a ghostly crossing guard, you know, I mean, that's kind of, and every day when they would prop me up in that chair, I would see them. But nobody else home. But I'm telling you, it's like, especially the day they knocked the keys out of the guy's hand.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, you know, because, and then they'd been over to pick it up. And if they hadn't,
they would have been smashed.
They would have been, you know,
yeah.
Smushed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are my others. So I don't know what it is about that trauma center, but there is a lot of helpful spirits, energy, beings. You know, it's like, so if people ever wonder, you know, do you believe in heaven? Do you believe in it? Well, there's more. I can just tell you that there's more. Your job is not done just because you're not breathing on this plane.
Right.
You still get to help. You still get to do. You still have a purpose, which to me is really important. So I don't know if I saw that I was allowed to see them to give me comfort. Like, you will still have purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not here, you will still have purpose.
Right. Because you were so close to the the veil at that point, on the other side.
Really,
that you could, or it could just be that you've always had that gift, but not able to access it until you're completely, you know.
Well, and I have to say, there are several times in my life that, you know, somebody you haven't talked to in years pops into your head and you call them, you know, and they're like, well, I just had a car accident, you know, like a couple of days ago, but I'm okay, you know, but it's just like, it's like,
maybe you are connecting to those types of spirits, you know, the ones who are helping, the ones who are guiding.
Because as real as those are, I don't want anything to do with the other ones.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
Guardian spirits.
You know.
I mean, even the one that you told in a previous episode about the man who kind of appeared before the train.
Yeah.
That was also kind of a...
The Lone Star Stranger.
Yeah.
Y'all. Be paying attention.
And I think so many times that people, they have experiences, but they don't recognize that they're having the experience, or they maybe, you know, they try to find so many other explanations. And, I mean, you legit are like, were right there with this, and you knew. And it was in that place where you were so vulnerable, you know, yourself.
Literally life and death.
Exactly. Exactly. And how powerful.
It was, you know, and some people, I think it's just too discombobulating for them to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
That there's more than, you know, more things in heaven and earth, you know, it's like, it's just, they just can't, you know, they just can't go there. But to me, it's not frightening. It's reassuring.
Yeah.
You know, it's look, I'll take all the help I can get.
There's so many things that, I mean, there's so many things that you can't see or you can't explain. Like, I can't see it. I can't see electricity, but I know it's happening.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, and no matter how people define it, whether they term it heaven or they term it the ultimate evermore or whatever it is, that the message of that story is so comforting and so powerful. And the fact that your experience was in part of it was in your hands, that you still had agency around your presence and your choice to continue.
It's kind of nice to know it's not one size fits all.
Exactly.
You know, it really is your spirit and your soul and your, you know, who you are. So,
wow. I just want to say that I'm so honored that you shared such a personal and certainly, you know, some very part of those experiences were obviously so very painful, but such vulnerability with us. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for that.
And the message of your story
is so
profound and so important.
Well, thank you guys. And thank you for the opportunity because, you know, as people struggle, I think knowing that there is more, you know, and that you're not ever alone, no matter how alone you feel, you're not, you know, and just to trust in that is like, can be all that you need in that moment.
Exactly.
Oh, that's absolutely the perfect message.
Yes, and something just to go back to is the power of a friend at your bedside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that touch can be the touch that anchors you to where you are. Because, you know, I think there's a reason that the children vanished when you were being supported by.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Teacher friend.
They were like, yep. No. And I didn't even teach little kids.
Yeah.
I taught high school kids and middle school kids. I never taught elementary kids.
Right. So. And the man obviously didn't have a whole lot of tolerance for children running around.
No, I mean, he was irritated. Yeah. He was not happy about it. You know, I was like, you could tell that was not his gig, you know.
Yeah.
He was probably grumpy grandpa, you know.
Yeah. But it also shows that they weren't just your manifestation. They belonged to the environment.
Yeah, that spot.
Yeah.
Which
is a big theme for us.
It's like,
that spirits, they inhabit and take up space and they exist in places perhaps that we're sometimes not even aware of.
Well, my daughter's convinced that cats see alternate universes. Like when they're sitting there just staring into space, but they're so intent on what they're looking at.
It's
like,
sense.
They see things we don't, you know? Yeah. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We love that topic. And our listeners love the topic of animals who see the unseen.
Yeah, and see the unseen.
Yep.
Yeah. No. Yeah. They just know.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And if you think of more stories, we'd love to have you back for a third episode.
That's right.
Well, thanks.
I'll
have to ponder that one. I'm like, all right. Ooh, do I know anyone?
No stress.
We do.
We just really enjoyed having you. So thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. Thank you so much for joining us. Please come back and listen to some more stories and share. And now we'll say so long, good friends. Until next time, when we meet. Back at the house.